Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Filling in for AME President Dan Levler, AME Executive Vice President Tom Moran.
Good morning, this is Tom Moran, the Executive Vice President of Suffolk AME, your sit-in host today for Suffolk Matters. My guest today is John Manzi, who's a Fire Marshal 2 with Suffolk County, and is also the unit president for the Fres unit. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good, Tom. How are you?
Very good. So let's jump into things. Share a little bit of information about your role as a fire marshal and how you became active within AME.
So I've been a fire marshal for the county since 2014. I was promoted to Fire Marshal 2 in 2019. The county fire marshal's office does a lot of things. Our most important job is ensuring a safe work environment for our employees. We do fire safety inspections. Life safety inspections, we assist with fire drills, making sure all the things that are there to protect the employees and protect the buildings are up to snuff. We also do public education, we do community outreach, and we oversee some coordination with the volunteer fire departments and EMS agencies, hazardous materials programs, technical rescue, and we assist with some of the grants. I became involved with the AME. Actually, you were running for Fres Unit President at the time. And you would ask me to come on board because Fres, Fire Rescue Emergency Services, is a conglomeration of our folks' communications, people who answer the 911 calls and dispatch the fire departments, the Office of Emergency Management, the Fire Marshal's Office, which I'm in, and some admin. And historically, there had been a lot more dispatches on the unit because they make up the majority of the unit, but we wanted some people from each division to make sure that the union was more encompassing and reflective of our membership. So you'd ask me to come on board. I became second vice president. When you moved up to the executive board, I filled in your spot, and then I was elected subsequent to that.
And also emergency management that falls into that as well.
Yes, emergency management. They do a very good job. They actually just completed the county comprehensive emergency management plan, updated that, and it was a massive undertaking. They actually got accredited by the state this year, too, as an emergency management agency, so they've been doing a lot of good work.
And so, but some of the people out maybe in the public wouldn't understand that all the work – besides what we just discussed that you guys do, you also are involved in a lot of stuff. The cyber hack you guys were involved in. There's a lot of writing the incident action and plans and putting things into place. Fres is really on the front lines a lot of times with the other units that are navigating through those waters.
Yeah, so during the cyber incident that occurred last year, our folks are very good at planning things and responding in emergencies. The Office of Emergency Management helped the folks at IT write their plan. Some people from the Fire Marshal's Office and other individuals were going out with IT. We were assisting them, checking for computers. While they had the technical expertise, we had the bodies with the equipment. We brought our mobile command post down there. We helped them with radios, communications, and logistical support because we have a lot of experience in the emergency world where a lot of our county employees are very good, but they operate more in the day-to-day routine when that's kind of our job, is to assist them in emergencies.
And just a rough number off the top of your head, give a rough number of buildings that the county has that you have to inspect in a year's time.
The county, between owned, operated, leased, and rented, we have a few thousand buildings. We have tons and tons of parklands. Which is where the county is, we have a lot of different types of buildings. You might be inspecting a park one day, an office building the next day, and then maybe one of our correctional facilities the third day, which all fall apart into the county, and very different things, varied things. But I'd say we probably have several thousand buildings all together.
Also, John, in addition to your work at Fres, you're currently the second assistant chief of the West Babylon Fire Department. Can you share a little bit about your background as a firefighter and how you got involved in the fire department?
Yeah, I joined the fire department in 2002 when I turned 18. But my father's a life member. He's still a life member. He's on the Board of Fire Commissioners. My grandfather was a life member. A lot of my family are or were at one point involved with the fire service. But my brother and I, my grandparents would babysit us a lot. So I was that kid who literally grew up at the firehouse. And for better or worse, I was there all the time. When I turned 18, I joined. Within a year, I completed my Firefighter 1. I completed my EMT. I spent 9, almost 10 years as a firefighter. I became lieutenant. Spent a couple years as lieutenant, a couple years as captain. Stepped back, did some focus on work, school, a couple other things. And then You know, a couple of the members had asked me, you know, about considering running for chief. I thought about it. I did. And 2 years ago, I went to the chief's office. I have 6 more years ahead of me in the chief's office, hopefully.
So, my brother, as an ex-chief myself, are you still loving doing it? Is it everything you planned it would be?
You know, it's funny because everybody thinks being chief is going on calls, and that's certainly part of it. Everybody wants to be the guy or the girl in charge of the major incident, right? But you know as well as I do, it's 90% of the job is administrative and planning and making sure that the members have the equipment they need, they have the training they need, things are working day to day. And the company officers do a phenomenal job of riding the ship. And, you know, as the chief, you got to more or less just have to give them the direction. The guys and girls will do what you need them to do, but you have to just be there, right? Sometimes it's just being that voice, listening to people. Other times it's trying to picture or paint that long-term strategic goal. But I do enjoy it. I mean, listen, it's like anything else. Over 8 years, you're going to have your ups and downs. And there are certain days you're just like, I just want to go home and go to bed. But there, you try to be there as much as you can for the membership and for the community. But I still enjoy it, yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people look at that job. Again, they realize like what that you're the fire chief when there is an alarm. I'm talking about the person in the public or a neighbor, yeah. Right? And they see that part of it. But it's also like our jobs. Me coming from as an emergency service dispatch, you as a fire marshal, they don't realize all the training that you take, all the hours that you put in the middle of the night out on stuff. They don't realize all the planning that goes into it. They just see almost the finished product. And they don't really think about the rest of the stuff that goes into it, right? But my background and my years of being a chief led me to getting my job with the county. I had to become an EMT to get my job. And in order to get hired as emergency service dispatch, you have to have an EMT card, which led me to that. You being in the fire service, you wouldn't have really known about the fire marshal office or had any of that background to take that exam and then move that as your career.
No, that's an excellent point. Two things. You know, we talked about the dispatchers being EMTs. I think that's valuable for those dispatchers. They, you know, they understand the when you're kicking on one phone call, they understand some of what's going on. They understand some of that anxiety and restlessness. You know, for the average member of the public, when they call 911, that might be the worst day of their life. For us, it's, you know, which is a good thing. We view everything, you know, we try to stay calm and look at it as all equal for them. But having that EMT as a dispatcher, you understand those pre-arrival instructions you're giving, you understand why you're giving those instructions. You can help talk that caller through, calm them down, get them the care they need before the ambulance, the first responder, or the police officer gets there. The fire marshal is an interesting thing. You know, when I started as a volunteer, I wasn't 100% sure where I wanted to go in my career. I knew I wanted to work in civil service. A lot of my family's from civil service. The benefits, the retirement, all of that. And the more I'd taken courses at the fire academy, you know, I was that guy who, you know, was every class that came up I would take, every summer I was there doing something. Did some training with some of the boys and girls from different offices, and I said, that's an interesting career. And fire marshal, most places is only offered as a promotional exam. Here you have to qualify to take it. It's not like most civil service exams where you just register and sign up and take it. You know, you need so many years as a volunteer or a professional firefighter. You need so much training. And it is one of the more challenging exams because we have such a broad scope of work. Now, besides all the code enforcement, you have to understand hazardous materials, technical rescue, fire investigation. You have to understand law enforcement, evidentiary procedure. So there's a lot that goes into it, and it's a good job. But being a volunteer and all that training absolutely helped me to get where I'm at, and is absolutely a critical part of my career.
And that's the big part about training is you train because you want to know you train because you know that at any instant you know you're gonna have to put your skills into use, right? And it's not always something that's you know cut and dry where you're gonna go do something. That's where I want to roll into. Last Thanksgiving of 2022, you know, recently I was able to attend the ceremony because our guest, John Manzi, was recognized as the Suffolk County Firefighter of the Year for something that happened on Thanksgiving Day, a day when people are with their families, they're enjoying themselves. And again, all of a sudden the public sees the fire department go into action when everybody else is enjoying themselves. So on that day, West Babylon Fire Department received an alarm for a fire. They got there and did find a fire, an active fire going on in the house. John, you were leading the hose team, as we say, in department to come in and extinguish the fire. And then some events unfolded that, you know, weren't to be expected, but training had to go. And talk us through that day and exactly what did happen and how it came that you were recognized for these heroic acts that you did.
So, like you said, it was Thanksgiving 2022. We were activated for an alarm for a reported of a stove fire, which cooking fires are a common, one of the most common causes, especially on Thanksgiving. So you hear fire, you automatically assume there's going to be a fire, but, you know, you're trying to gauge in your mind as you're responding to this call what's going on. One of the other assistant chiefs gets there first, Chief Allen, and he gives a report that we have, you know, a fire on the second floor. But, okay, we get there. The engine company gets there first. Those are the guys who carry the hose in the water, for those of us who are not familiar. It's an exterior staircase going up to the second floor. The hose line is there. I said, hey, let me see what we have. Captain Smith and one of the other firefighters went upstairs with an extinguisher to try to quickly suppress it and limit the amount of water damage in the home. And we don't want to, we want to put the fire up. We don't want to ruin someone's home if we don't have to. We want to limit the amount of damage, especially around the holidays. He goes up in front of me. I tell the hose line, let me get up there and see what we have. I noticed Captain Smith was kind of sitting awkwardly on the staircase. So Maddie, like I said, I grew up at the firehouse. Maddie was one of those guys when I was a kid who, you know, was always there. And he was a junior director, and he's a guy who taught me a lot. And I'm like, Maddie. So, and I could tell he was wrong. I grabbed him, and I quickly realized that he was having a medical emergency. I got on the radio. I called Chief Kamalik, who was in charge of the call, and said, hey, one of our members is having a medical emergency. I got to get him down a staircase, and don't send anybody else up the staircase because we don't want to get jammed up on there. I started bringing him down. Some of the other firefighters helped me bring him down the rest of the staircase. We got him on the landing. We were able to assess him more. We verified that he wasn't breathing. He didn't have a pulse. We now had to take his pack off him. We had to take his gear off him so we could start care, start CPR. We started CPR. Now, at this point, we still have a fire. I have to now direct other firefighters upstairs, which Chief Allen made sure that the fire was put out and overhaul was conducted. It didn't spread any further. Some of the Suffolk County police officers helped me. Some of the firefighters helped me. We took Maddie's gear. We started CPR. We got an AED. The ambulance showed up. We defibrillated him twice on scene. I started help moving the ambulance. I started care. On top of everything else, I'm still a paramedic. And it's kind of that weird role. Am I fire chief today? Am I paramedic? Am I a firefighter? Thankfully, some other excellent paramedics who I've worked with over the years showed up. Because at this point, this is only a couple of minutes, but I'm mentally and physically just done. I'm exhausted. Handed it off. By the time Maddie got to the hospital, he was awake and talking. We put the fire out. We made all the notifications we had to do. We went to go to the hospital to see him. And I remember I walk in and he's like, wow, you don't look good. And I'm like, yeah, I can tell you why. And he was right back to his laughing self. He had to go in. He had a heart attack. That's what the cause was. He had some bypass, some cardiac rehab. And, you know, a year later, he's back to duty in the fire service now. So,
you know, it's something, you know, there was an emergency that happened. And, you kind of take a step back for a minute and say, what happened if that call didn't happen and he didn't go down? Would he have been at his house and suffered that medical emergency? And maybe the outcome wouldn't have been the same, you know?
Absolutely. The most important thing you can do in any emergency is act, right? Maybe not the best action, is still better than inaction. But in this case, right place, wrong time, I guess, or wrong place, the right time. You know, he went down around a bunch of firefighters, EMTs, paramedics, police officers. We had all the equipment there. We had the AEDs, the cardiac monitors, the medications, and we were able to render care immediately. The AHA always stretches the importance of early recognition and early care. The sooner you could start doing anything, even if it's hands-only CPR compressions, you're perfusing the blood, and he's now his brain and his heart are getting perfused with oxygen and glucose. And the more you can keep the brain perfusing, the better your long-term survival is. It's like each minute without CPR is almost a 10% decrease in survivability. You know, the AHA, that's why they push so much just the hands-only and early recognition. And like you said, it could have been a lot worse had it not occurred when and where it occurred.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, John, I commend you for your swift action and that, you know, this had a great outcome. But it's even different when it's somebody that's one of our own, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because of you and the efforts of everybody involved, you know, Matt Smith is walking, still walking around every day, and his family still has him. And again, if there wasn't this emergency, there might have been a different outcome. So my hat's off to you, John, and congratulations on that.
Thank you. You know, it was an honor, but I just want to stress that it was definitely a team effort from the people on scene, all the people who came, you know, the officers of the first precinct assisting us transporting him to the hospital, and then the entire hospital staff, the emergency room staff who we deal with all the time, bringing patients were phenomenal. And then just the recovery, and it was definitely a team effort with a great outcome.
And you talk about the team effort. You know, we've been hearing a lot recently about our first responders, our firefighters, our community leaders. All of them have been stressing that, you know, Long Island's experienced a shortage of volunteers. I mean, people just either don't have the time, they don't have the interest, or they're not even aware. You know, a lot of people call 911, and you know, they think that, you know, that the staff is paid here on the island. You know, they've moved in from different areas where they have paid service. They're not really familiar with what we do. But have you seen on your end, as being the fire chief, about if are people joining, or are there people that aren't staying, or are there people joining later in life?
So we had quite a few years where our membership in West Babylon was down, but I feel like overall it's down. The last year or two, we have had an uptick in people joining, and it's a mix. We have some people older in life. We're seeing a lot of younger people join, either in high school, right, when they get out of high school. And I think part of that is, you know, Tom joins. We're friends. Oh, you're in the fire department? That sounds cool. It gives you a place. Oh, you have something to do? Let me go try it out. But I think, like you said, we're seeing a lot more people move into the community who are newer to the community. And I think some of them come from New York City. They come from other areas, and they don't think they understand. But unfortunately, I think retention has become a big issue. A lot of people join, but they can't stay either. You know, some people join and it's not for them. But some people, I think, things are just so hectic and busy on Long Island. You know, who has childcare issues? Who has a spouse that works? Who works, you know, two jobs themselves? Or who has other commitments? But I think the shortage is statewide. It's definitely affecting us here on Suffolk County a lot.
It's, you know, it's something we're both kind of out of the same mold there. You know, I grew up with my grandfather being a member of Merrick and Ladder. My dad's an ex-captain for Preport Hose 5. I grew up around it. So like 18, it was this natural thing, like third generation, you're going to do it. It's the same way, third generation, you're going to do it. But it's the people that aren't around it, and that they don't really either know how to join, or they don't know how it happens. So we're the best advocates to just say, you know, hey, it's easy. You know, we put signs around town, come down and join, because there are benefits, right? Besides helping your community, there's other stuff that goes on. John, you carry two union cards. Not only are you a Suffolk County employee and an AME member, but you also are doing some teaching for people that aren't members yet, but they want to learn about fire science. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes. So the Suffolk County Community College has a couple different programs for students who want to expand their role. They have an EMT program. They have a paramedic program that is part of a two-year associate's degree. And in the fire science, they have a fire science certificate, and they have a two-year applied science degree for fire protection engineering. And what we see is a lot of it are younger people graduate high school, right? They want to get involved in the emergency response field, emergency work. A lot of these jobs require college. So they, you know, it's one thing to go to college and take courses that, you know, just take courses. When you take a course that you're interested in or something that's going to help you or move you forward, I think the students are a lot more engaged, they're a lot more active, and they can apply that knowledge. So I've taught in the fire science program there and the EMT program. And it's, you know, I've seen students who, when I'm teaching classes, you know, and then they come out to the Fire Academy or they come out to Fres and they do training revolutions with us. And, you know, some of them are like, oh, hey, I want to be a fire marshal. Hey, I want to be a dispatcher. That's why I'm taking an EMT class. You know, Suffolk has an excellent cadre of instructors and professors, and they have that mix of the didactic, the educational background, but also the actual real world application. You know, all the instructors there are certified providers or have firefighting experience, or most of them have both. So you're not going and taking a lecture with, you know, somebody who might be very knowledgeable but lacks practical. They have a good mix there.
And once you are a volunteer, you know, there are certain avenues that are open for you now. You can take civil service exams, and you know, the charge is waived because you are volunteering and that you're giving back to your community. And, you know, what you want to do in your professional life. So there's avenues that the Volunteer Fire Services, they bring people to, right?
Yeah, Suffolk County has the service program, where if you're an active volunteer, you lay out for the cost of the semester for school, and then depending on your grades, you get reimbursed a percentage of the cost of going to school. So you can join, say, hey, you know what? I want to become a paramedic, right? I join my local fire department or ambulance corps, who certainly need members. You know, there's 125-plus agencies in the county who all need members. You join. You can go in. You can go to school. You can use the service benefit. They're going to help you pay for school. You can get your certifications. And then, like you said, take the civil service exams at no cost. There's tax benefits. And there's always the intangible benefits, right? Like, I've made some lifelong friends from the fire service, right? There's boys and girls who maybe aren't in my department anymore who we're still friends with because they moved to a different department or they got a different job. You know, like I said, it's not just the immediate family. You know, I have extended family, like you said. You know, I can go to a lot of different fire departments and know somebody either because I taught with them, I worked with them, we met at some training or drill, and it just becomes this bigger community, extended family. But there's, like I said, certainly all the tangible benefits and then the intangible stuff we talked about.
Of course. You know, one of the other things I wanted to touch on, and you are obviously, this is your background where you're able to speak on this. We know through experience at winter time that there's a lot of factors that go into why we have more emergencies. But there's a lot of safety. You know, people are bringing a Christmas tree into their home, right? And we see that, you know, fires happen because of that. But let some of the listeners know some of the things, hazards that happen this time of year, and also the stuff that they can do to help prevent having an emergency in their home.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Almost half of all residential fires occur in the winter months, December, January, and February. So that's certainly things to be considered. We talked about Christmas trees. You know, whether you're going to use a real tree or a fake tree, as a real tree, you want to make sure it's watered and it's moist. But keeping it away from any open flames, any sources of heat, you know, 3 feet is a good general rule for any source of heat separation. Candles. A lot of people use candles for holiday celebrations or because they look good. Unfortunately, we have more candle fires in December than almost the rest of the year combined. You know, there's certainly safe alternatives you could use. There's some very good battery-powered candles that still look real. But if you're going to use heat, never keep any open flame unattended. Always keep it 3 feet away and be cognizant of what's above it. You know, you don't want to make sure there's carpets, drapes, anything above it. Also, we see a lot of, you know, heating emergencies in the winter, you know, because obviously the demand is greater. So it's important to have it serviced once a year, have your chimney inspected once a year. If you're going to use a fireplace, you want to make sure you have a screen, either a mesh screen or a glass screen, because those little embers can come out and they can light things on fire and you not realize. And if you don't properly service your chimney, you can build up an active fire in there.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things you don't even think about until you're going to go use it. But, you know, chimney being on outside of your house, you know, that's out in the elements, right? How many times are there an emergency because, you know, at the top of the chimney, there's a screen, you know, that keeps out, you know, wildlife or keeps out debris or anything to get in there. It's always one of those things like your oil burner, you always want to have serviced before the season gets cold. Same thing with your fireplace, right? And, you know, every few years, you want to check the points on your fireplace, you know, to make sure that, you know, nothing's corroded. You know, all those carcinogens and burning and stuff in there, you know, that's that's doing damage on the inside of your chimney that you don't necessarily think about, but you do, you know, sometimes people just want to put logs there, light it on fire, and, you know, you're not really thinking about what's going on.
Yeah, it's true. You know, listen, fireplaces are nice. They heat, they ambience, you know, it's very, just very relaxing, but we have to have a more of a safety-minded culture. You know, you can't just think about safety when there's an emergency. You have to think about it all the time. And all these devices, any heat-producing device, you have to think about carbon monoxide, right? You should have carbon monoxide detectors in your house, you know, by each source in each sleeping area. They make ones that are sealed units that last for 5 to 7 years. So you hook it up, basically set it and forget it. But now you have that protection, because otherwise you could have a carbon monoxide emergency in your house. And if you don't have a detector, you're not going to know it. You're not going to smell it. You're not going to see it. You're not going to taste it.
I mean, you've seen it, I'm sure, since you got in the fire service. You know, I've 32 years I've been doing it. You know, everybody needs smoke detectors in the house. And I tell people all the time, you need a smoke detector in every single room of your house, because fires burn different the way they did years ago. I mean, there's so many just different construction types now. You know, and I'm digging in the weeds a little bit here, but, you know, fires burn a lot quickly now. You know, there's a lot of instances where you could be awake and there could be a fire in your house, and you just about have enough time to get yourself and your family out. You know, it's really scary, but you can do these preventative things. You can plan for it by having the smoke detectors in every single room. You know, there's never enough. You know, you could always have enough coverage, carbon monoxide detectors. You're investing to make sure that your family's safety is the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Underwriters Laboratory and the Fire Safety Research Institute have done a lot of studies in the fire science field that fires are reaching their peak heat release rate much quicker. You know, years ago when things were made of, you know, actual natural materials, they didn't burn as quickly. But most things at home are synthetic now. There's a lot more plastics. Lithium ions, we've seen some lithium ion battery emergencies and fires. They release a tremendous amount of heat very quickly. So like you said, Tom, the quicker you notify something, the better. And the most important thing you could do, get out, stay out, call 911. Because if you go back in, unfortunately, we see it sometimes. People go back in and they're injured and sometimes unfortunately killed going back in trying to grab something, belongings or whatever, at the house. Get outside, stay outside, and call 911.
Yeah. You know, coming into the Christmas season, you know, how many people are going to get gifts with lithium batteries? You know, it's crazy. The amount of things that need to be charged, and you have them plugged in, they get overcharged, they start fires. I mean, it's really turning into, you know, the education is out there more now about them. But, you know, we're still seeing a lot of those fires. And, you know, those fires take a lot of water to put out, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And, they're still doing a lot of research on that. But anything that produces heat, you know, whether that's your portable space heater or that's your toaster oven, right? You want that plugged directly into an outlet. You only want one of those per outlet. You don't want to overload it. And you want to make sure, like I said, try to keep as much clearance around these things as we can, because, you know, the best fire is the one that we prevent, right? Benjamin Franklin, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The more that we can have a safety mindset, the better off everybody is.
You know, that the quote, it rings true, and I think that's a great way to wrap up our episode here, John. It's been my pleasure to have you here, and being able to highlight the stuff that you've done at work, that you've done in your volunteer life. And listen, you're volunteering your time to be a union officer and to help people when they're needing help. We wanted to just speak on that. There is a website, suffolkbravest.com. If somebody is looking to get involved in the volunteer fire service, they'll direct you to your local department or where to go if you're not too sure. So you can always log on to that website. And John, I hope you have a great holiday. Hope I don't have to see you at all. And everybody just gets to know the planning, John, and not to see the John in action. But if they do, they'll be in great hands. It's great having you as a guest, John.
Thank you for having me, Tom.